There was a ton of firefighters that just kind of went above and beyond the call of duty, and they did some ladder rescues.
A fire consumes an apartment building in Juneau. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, law enforcement agencies describe the extent of sex trafficking across the state.
The trafficker may be a family member or maybe a quote-unquote boyfriend, and something other than money is probably being exchanged.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
Fire officials are still working to determine the cause of last night's fire at an apartment building in downtown Juneau. The four-story Gastineau apartments will be written off as a total loss. But fire crews were able to keep the blaze from spreading to other buildings along South Franklin Street. Meanwhile, the city and borough of Juneau and the American Red Cross have set up an emergency shelter at Centennial Hall for residents displaced by the fire. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Juneau Fire Chief Rich Etheridge says some Capital City Fire and Rescue firefighters spent more than 12 hours battling the Gastineau apartments blaze, which started a little before 5 o'clock Monday night.
We finally sent the last of the folks home about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Etheridge says every available firefighter in Juneau, both volunteer and career staff, responded to the scene. A firefighter from Anchorage, who was visiting the capital city, drove an ambulance and delivered supplies. A U.S. Coast Guard Jayhawk helicopter transported six firefighters from Sitka to provide additional support. The chief says as soon as firefighters arrived, it was clear that the fourth floor would be fully engulfed. The decision was made to try and hold the fire there and keep it from spreading to adjacent buildings.
There was a ton of firefighters that just kind of went above and beyond the call of duty, and they did some ladder rescues of civilians as well as one of the crews got kind of cornered in there with the high heat and low air, and so they were able to help the interior crews get out through a window.
Amazingly, there were very few injuries and no fatalities, despite several residents being home when the fire started. Etheridge says there are no reports of anyone missing. Three civilians were taken to Bartlett Regional Hospital's emergency room with what he believed was smoke inhalation, and a firefighter suffered a head injury.
He was treated and released at Bartlett, and he's going to be off work for the next shift or two to recuperate from that.
Etheridge says it appears one cat died, but all other pets either left with their owners or were rescued by firefighters. He says Fire Marshal Dan Jaeger and his team have already started an investigation into what caused the blaze.
There's been a lot of speculation and there's a lot of rumors out there, but fire investigators are up there and they're working on that as we speak. But it's heavy damage and a lot of collapsed debris, so it may be another day or two before we have some kind of a determination.
While firefighters were battling the blaze, city officials and the American Red Cross set up an emergency shelter at Centennial Hall. The city's emergency programs manager, Tom Matisse, says mobilizing the shelter went smoothly, despite the fact that Centennial Hall, like much of downtown Juneau, had no power. Volunteers used flashlights and lanterns until electricity was restored. Matisse says the city just bought a generator for Centennial Hall, which is Juneau's main emergency shelter, but it hasn't been installed yet.
We killed the power to downtown on purpose as part of the tactical aspect of fighting the fire. You know, we just got the funding for the generator. We just got it into town. It's one piece of the puzzle, and we're working towards completing the rest.
Will Muldoon lived on the second floor of the Gastineau apartments and registered with the Red Cross just hours after the fire. He says he's been impressed by the outpouring of community support.
While the fire was still going, they already had Centennial set up, and it was it's pretty amazing to see that in action and to be intimately involved with that and to benefit from that from after going through such a horrible ordeal.
Muldoon says Red Cross volunteers helped him get in touch with his mom. He's currently staying with his dad and says he'll soon be looking for a new apartment. He may have lost most of his possessions, but he escaped the fire with his dog, Leonidas, a 3-year-old pit bull lab mix, and firefighters were able to rescue his chinchilla. Muldoon says they mean more to him than any computer or couch or article of clothing he may have lost.
It's just one of those things, you know, it's not, I can't do much to change it, and I think the best I can do is just be reactive and proactive, and I think that's pretty much been my mindset since I saw it happening.
The Red Cross is accepting monetary donations to help victims of the Gastineau Apartments fire through the Alaska Red Cross website. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The lure of the big city can be irresistible for a young person leaving home, but danger awaits many teens and young adults who are led into a life of drugs and prostitution by sex traffickers on city streets. The State of Alaska Task Force on the Crimes of Human Trafficking held its initial public hearing in Anchorage yesterday to hear from experts on sex crimes in an effort to determine how widespread sex trafficking is in the state. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
The testimony was lengthy and disturbing. According to FBI Special Agent Jolene Godin, there have been 7 federal prosecutions in human trafficking cases filed in Alaska, while 105 trafficking victims have been identified. But that is maybe half of the number of victims, since so few come forward out of fear of repercussions, Godin says.
These victims are not the victims that are going to self-report. If they do self-report, or it gets reported to law enforcement, it's oftentimes going to be under something else. It's going to be a domestic violence, or it might be a sexual abuse of a minor case, or something like that. It's not typically going to come to the attention of law enforcement as a trafficking case.
Traffickers can be members of organized crime, agriculture or fishing interests, pimps, or even neighbors and friends. Difficulty in identifying victims is one of the aspects of the problem. Anchorage Police Detective Sergeant Kathy Lacey told the panel that runaway teens are targeted by traffickers in malls, bus stations, and coffee houses, anywhere young people gather.
The preferred way to sell women is over the internet. The trafficker's overhead is as little as a cell phone or a hotel room. We're finding a lot of women coming up from the lower 48 for the weekend, renting a hotel room, advertising while they're here, seeing as many clients as they can in a 2 to 3 day period.
The line between a prostitute and a sex trafficking victim is a thin one, she said. But prosecution of offenders depends on identifying the victims. Lacey said APD had made 1,028 prostitution arrests over the last 5 years, but prostitutes and sex trafficking victims are not the same thing. Godin says sex trafficking is not unknown in rural areas, but it takes a different form than in the city.
The majority of our cases here in Anchorage have involved, you know, Craigslist or the online advertisement, and that is not what you would see in a small community. There's no need to advertise online. What you're more likely to see, it's going to be less formal, word of mouth. The trafficker may be a family member, or it may be a quote-unquote boyfriend, and something other than money is probably being exchanged, something like drugs or alcohol.
In Alaska, the age of entry into the life of a sex trafficked victim is usually 15 to 17, Godin said. And victims come from every socioeconomic group, wealthy or impoverished, she said. Anchorage's Covenant House, which provides temporary shelter and programs for homeless adolescents and runaways, has even had traffickers infiltrate its shelter, according to Executive Director Allison Kern. There is a disproportionate number of Alaska Native youth recruited by traffickers, according to Lacey. Covenant House Program Director Diana Blind confirms that from Covenant House data.
Nearly 50% of our kids are Alaska Native. This number has consistently increased over the last several years. While traffickers are equal opportunists and will prey on any young person who is vulnerable, youth who are coming from small villages are likely more vulnerable to traffickers than a youth who grew up in Anchorage and is familiar with the concept of dangerous strangers and places within the city.
Also, statistics show there is a strong link between girls who spend time in foster care and those recruited into sexual exploitation. Kern says 1/3 of Covenant House youth are from foster care. Mike Garrity, who chairs the task force, says the information will be passed to the legislature when it convenes in January.
We'll be making a report to the legislature in January of 2013, and I hope to make recommendations for how we can improve in this area, improve law enforcement, and make recommendations for changes in the law, changes in training, education, and so on.
Last session, a bill sponsored by Governor Sean Parnell created the task force and removed the prostitute label from sex trafficking victims and created harsher penalties for traffickers. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
There will be two lease sales in Anchorage tomorrow. The state will announce the winning bids for its annual North Slope drilling lease sale in conjunction with a federal sale for drilling rights in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. The sales come 3 months after the U.S. Department of the Interior announced the land it'll open for drilling in the NPRA. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the state of Alaska, North Slope Borough, and the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation are lashing out against the federal plan.
Interior's preferred alternative plan, released earlier this year, allows for oil and gas production on some 4.5 million acres in the NPRA, or as the state sees the federal move.
By the way, we're gonna take off the table about almost half of what is the potential in the NPRA.
That's Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan. He says the state agreed to work with federal agencies like the Bureau of Land Management on the interior plan for drilling in the NPRA.
We sign up to be part of the decision-making group, and you put your name on that document when it comes out. Right? The final EIS would have the state of Alaska's stamp of approval saying, yep, we agree with this.
But the state does not approve of it, nor do other involved groups in Alaska, like Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. ASRC's Richard Glenn says the government reneged on a promise to consult tribal corporations.
When we weighed in with our viewpoint as consulting agency on behalf of the borough or as a private landowner on behalf of ASRC, our viewpoints weren't listened to. It's as if their mind was made up before they started the consultation process.
Glenn says Interior has locked up the most promising regions in the NPRA. The federal government says it chose the regions to open and close based on industry interest and protections for wildlife. Jacob Adams works for the North Slope Borough Mayor's Office. He's also a member of the ASRC Board of Directors. He says the borough recommended protecting two specific habitats in the NPRA, but Interior went too far.
I mean, we're conservation-minded, but the secretary has gone way beyond what is necessary to provide protection for the waterfowl and the caribou.
All groups indicated, for their own reasons, that Interior's moves in the NPRA violate various laws. And Commissioner Sullivan says suing the federal government is an option.
Well, I would say it's something that we're taking a look at. It's certainly one of the options.
No one, nobody from the borough, the state, or the corporation, would offer any other option to confront the federal government. In Anchorage, I'm Peter Granitz.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaskans turn out to vote across the state.
We had people, a line that was just really going outside the building when we first opened up.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Workers with the Alaska Division of Elections called around the state this afternoon to get a sense of how voter turnout was going. Gail Fanumiai is the division director. She says turnout is varying across the state.
In our Region 4 office, which is basically the northwestern part of the state, turnout was varying between 17 and 21%. In Fairbanks, it was fluctuating between 10% and 21%. In the Region 1 area, which is the southeastern part of the state, Kodiak Island and Kenai, it was ranging between 18% and 26%.
Funumiai did not have good information for South Central Alaska by mid-afternoon, but one polling place in Airport Heights was reporting pretty good voter turnout. Lena Perry runs the polling place at Trinity Christian Reformed Church. She says voters were lined up outside when she opened the doors at 7 this morning.
We had people a line that was just really going outside the building when we first opened up. And it has been continuous. This is the biggest lull that we've had all day long.
That was around noon. Perry says she's expecting a big surge once people get off work.
We have a lot of people who work during the day and come here after they've been home and had dinner. In this precinct, we have 1,790. So far, we've had 396, and lots of people are still coming in.
Tune in for more election coverage from APRN, broadcasting live from Election Central at the Denaina Convention Center from 9 to 11 tonight. An effort is underway to close down the Togiak Sack Row herring fishery for the next 3 years. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The Togiak Sack Row herring fishery is the largest herring fishery in the state by volume, but participation in the fishery has dwindled in recent years, especially among local Bristol Bay fishermen. There's also been concerns raised that the commercial fishery is negatively impacting the practice of local people in the Togiak region in collecting herring roe on kelp for subsistence. When the Alaska Board of Fisheries meets next month in Naknek, they will consider Proposal 13 to close the Togiak Sack Row herring fishery through 2016. That proposal was put forward by the Togiak Traditional Council. Jonathan Forsling is a spokesman for the council, and he sits on the Nooshigak Fish and Game Advisory Committee that met last week to look at the proposals that will be presented to the Board of Fisheries.
You know, the price of herring, it's worth more left in the water. It's worth more to the locals. It's worth more to the people that are not making money fishing it. And it's worth more to our ecosystem left in the water.
The supporters of Proposal 13 believe the quality of the roe on kelp subsistence fishery will improve if the commercial sack row herring fishery is closed. They also believe that if the quality of the subsistence fishery improves, more Togiak area residents will participate in the subsistence fishery. Commercial fisherman Stan Small from Dillingham was one of those who attended last week's Nooshigak Advisory Committee meeting.
You'll kill your markets that you've got now. They're pretty good. You're just not getting it because of the processors. It's not the market's bad. It's the processors that's killing you. Anyway, send them a message. You shut it down. You just turned around and wiped out your markets.
The Togiak Sack Row herring fishery held earlier this year had an official estimated ex-vessel value of $2.1 million, but the postseason adjustments have increased the price to about $200 a ton, which would increase the ex-vessel value to nearly $4 million. After a few minutes of discussion, the members of the Nooshigak Fish and Game Advisory Committee voted 8-6 in favor of Proposal 13, calling for the commercial sack row fishery to be closed for 3 years. Commercial herring fisherman Robert Hyano noted that the Togiak Traditional Council is seeking to close the fishery while at the same time they're working to buy herring from local fishermen through their partnership with Copper River Seafoods.
To me, to take action to shut down the state's largest herring fishery, I don't know where you guys are coming from.
After the comments of Hyano and several members of the advisory committee, an effort was made to reconsider the vote on Proposal 13 to shut down the Togiak Sack Row herring fishery. That effort was successful. Herring fisherman Frank Woods III from Dillingham spoke to the effort to reverse the vote on Proposal 13.
I'm presenting my yay vote to nay vote to keep all the other proposals on the table and continue to work with the existing current regulation system to get better results and better discussion input from this committee.
After just a few minutes of additional discussion, the Nooshigak Fish and Game Advisory Committee then voted 11-3 in opposition to Proposal 13, which seeks to close the Togiak Sack Row herring fishery through 2016. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
A local organization marks National Homelessness Awareness Month with a candlelight vigil tomorrow night in Fairbanks. The annual downtown walk is put on by Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Street Outreach and Advocacy Program, or SOAP. SOAP Supervisor Randy Lewis says the event is aimed at raising awareness of homeless youth
who don't have family support or don't accept the family support that they have, and are living in unsafe situations that make them especially vulnerable for exploitation.
Fairbanks' homeless youth population is estimated to be in the hundreds at any given time. Lewis oversees operation of a downtown drop-in center that provides 25 to 35 homeless kids with food, clothing, and other assistance.
It's a warm place. Unfortunately, it's only open from 2 to 6 Monday through Friday, so it's not available all the time.
An effort is underway to set up an overnight youth shelter. Local nonprofit Fairbanks Youth Advocates has a state grant through the city of Fairbanks to renovate a donated downtown building into a shelter, but it won't be ready until next fall. Group Executive Director Mary Lee Bates says a temporary shelter will be soon available at the First Presbyterian Church.
Essentially, young people will be able to come to a particular entrance, and two adult chaperones are downstairs, and everyone is in the same space.
Bates says that's to assure oversight and safety. The initial plan is to offer space for about 10 kids.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com. Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net.
Salmon are Alaska's long-term investment. That view was voiced by cultural anthropologist and writer Richard Nelson during the final day of Sitka's Whale Fest. The event includes a symposium addressing trends and developments in marine and coastal science. In his speech, Nelson compared salmon to other natural resources.
If we take care of the oceans where salmon grow and the rivers where salmon spawn, these fish will continue bringing hundreds of millions of dollars into Alaska's economy and providing huge amounts of food for Alaskan communities literally forever. Long after the oil runs dry, long after the natural gas is gone, long after truly renewable energy becomes a reality, long after the clear cuts have regrown, long after the mines have played out, we can continue to have salmon. My friend Sam Skaggs, who is a professional investor in Juneau, says this: Alaska's river systems are like a bank that pays huge dividends every year in salmon for all Alaskans. This ecosystem bank was highly perfected long before humankind ever existed. We cannot improve upon it. In most other places, the principal from this bank has been overdrawn, and the bank itself has been seriously damaged. So far, this hasn't happened in Alaska. Well, we might think, my friend Sam says, of salmon as God's capital. We can use it wisely or we can squander it. If we want to protect the salmon runs, we got to do it in exactly the same way that the salmon runs have been jeopardized. One river at a time, one tributary at a time. This requires that we make wise and careful economic and environmental choices, and that we acknowledge that we cannot have it all. And we have to focus on the long-term benefits by always putting salmon first. Is this idea politically viable in Alaska? Could it possibly not be? This is one issue, if there ever was any, that can bring our diverse population of Alaskans together, because every single one of us can gain immeasurably by taking care of our salmon.
That was cultural anthropologist and writer Richard Nelson speaking Sunday at Sitka's Whale Fest, which addresses more than whales. After 2 years of planning and 12 years of dreaming, the Hoodoo Brewing Company is officially open to the public in Fairbanks. 20 people gathered just after the doors opened last week as the first kegs were tapped. Hoodoo is Alaska's 23rd microbrewery. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more.
Inside the Hoodoo Brewing Company, tall ceilings hang over large, shiny steel fermenting tanks that dwarf the bar. As music blares from a speaker in back, owner and brewer Bobby Wilkin watches members of his small staff fill pint glasses for the first few customers to come through the doors.
We have the Kolsch, which is a northern German ale. We tried to make it, we basically made it as well as we could, exactly like you would get in Cologne, Germany. The other beer is American IPA, simple recipe, just all American malts. And then hops from the Willamette Valley in Oregon.
Hoodoo is named for a mountain range south of Paxson. That's where Wilkin and his brother used to go snow machining.
One time, you know, we were parked on a glacier and drinking a beer, and we're always thinking about brewery names. And this is many years ago, and we said, "Wow, wouldn't Hoodoo Brewing Company be a cool name?" And that was basically it.
Wilkin spent a couple years working for the Alaskan Brewing Company in Juneau. He also studied brewing for a year in Munich, Germany.
There's basically two different kinds of styles of brew houses, English style and German style. And the German style being more complex and intricately built to make beer to exacting specifications. So our brew house is a German style brew house for that reason, just to have complete control over the beers that we make.
Opening day has been long in coming for Wilkin. He ran into a few roadblocks with the city. A brewery involves a number of mechanical systems, from plumbing to steam heat and a heavy electrical load.
So it's a real complex project that this, and the city had never done a brewery before.
Beer is selling in 64-ounce glass growlers for now. Wilkin's still working out the kinks with the labeling issue before he can sell kegs and distribute beer to local restaurants. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer and Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Mike Mason in Dillingham, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.